Hello and welcome. I'm Jennifer March, and this is not your mother's story time. This week, we bring you The Thin Santa Claus by Ellis Parker Butler. Butler was a full-time banker and part-time author, but that didn't stop him from producing over 30 books and 2,000 short stories. He dropped out of high school at the end of his freshman year. He was 17 years old at the time and spent the next 11 years working odd jobs while working on his writing. Butler left some parting advice to aspiring authors in his obituary. Write the way you want to. Never sacrifice quality for quantity. Go to school if you want to, but if you're going to write, you will, regardless of schooling. I hope you'll listen all the way to the end. There's a little holiday surprise I'd like to give you. And now, The Thin Santa Claus, or The Chicken Yard That Was a Christmas Stocking, by Ellis Parker Butler. Mrs. Gratz opened her eyes and looked out at the drizzle that made the Christmas morning gray. Her bed stood against the window, and it was easy for her to look out. All she had to do was to roll over and pull the shade aside. Having looked at the weather, she rolled again onto the broad flat of her back and made herself comfortable for a while, for there was no reason why she should get up until she felt like it. "Such a Christmas," she said good-naturedly to herself. "I guess such weather's as bad for Santa Claus. Maybe 'tis because of such weather's he don't come by my house. I don't blame him. So muddy." She let her eyes close indolently. Not yet was she hungry enough to imagine the tempting odor of fried bacon and eggs, and she idly slipped into sleep again. She was in no hurry. She was never in a hurry. What is the use of being in a hurry when you own a good little house and have money in the bank and are a widow? What is the use of being in a hurry anyway? Mrs. Gratz was always placid and fat, and she always had been. What is the use of having money in the bank and a good little house if you are not placid and fat? Mrs. Gratz lay on her back and slept, placidly and fatly, with her mouth open, as if she expected Santa Claus to pass by and drop a present into it. Her dreams were pleasant. It was no disappointment to Mrs. Gratz that Santa Claus had not come to her house. She had not expected him. She did not even believe in him. "Yes," she told Mrs. Flannery next door, as she handed a little parcel of toys over the fence for the little Flannerys. "Once I believes in such a Santa Claus myself yet, I make me pretty good times then. But now I'm too old. I don't believe in such things. But I make pretty good times still. I have a good little house and money in the bank." Suddenly, Mrs. Gratz closed her mouth and opened her eyes. She smelled imaginary bacon frying. She felt real hunger. She slid out of bed and began to dress herself, and she had just buttoned her red flannel petticoat around her wide waist when she heard a silence and paused. For a moment she stood, trying to realize what the silence meant. The English sparrows were chirping as usual and making enough noise, but through their bickerings the silence still annoyed Mrs. Gratz. And then, quite suddenly again, she knew. Her chickens were not making their usual morning racket. "I bet you I know what it is, sure," she said, and continued to dress as placidly as before. When she went down, she found that she had won the bet. A week before, two chickens had been stolen from her coop, and she had had a strong padlock put on the chicken house. Now the padlock was pried open, and the chicken house was empty, and 9 hens and a rooster were gone. Mrs. Gratz stopped and entered the low gate and surveyed the vacant chicken yard placidly. If they were gone, they were gone. "Such a Santa Claus," she said good-naturedly. "I don't like such a Santa Claus, taking away and not bringing. Pretty soon he don't have such a good name anymore if he keeps up doing like this. People likes the bringing Santa Claus. I guess they don't think much of the taking away business. He gets a bad name quick enough if he does this much." She turned to bend her head to look into the vacant chicken house and stood still. She put her foot out and touched something her eyes had lighted upon, and the thing moved. It was a purse of worn black leather, soaked by the drizzle, but still holding the bend that comes to men's purses when worn long in a back trouser pocket. One end of the purse was muddy and pressed deep into the soft soil where a heel had tramped on it. Mrs. Gratz bent and picked it up. There was $900 in bills in the purse. Mrs. Gratz stood still while she counted the bills, and as she counted, her hands began to tremble, and her knees shook, and she sank on the door sill of the chicken house and laughed until the tears rolled down her face. Occasionally she stopped to wipe her eyes, and the flood of laughter gradually died away into ripples of intermittent giggles that were like sobs after sorrow. Mrs. Gratz had no great sense of humor, but she could see the fun of finding $900. It was enough to make her laugh, so she laughed.
"Goodness, such a Santa Claus!" she exclaimed with a final sigh of pleasure. "Such a Christmas present from Santa Claus! No wonder he is so fat yet when he eats 10 chickens in one night already. I don't kick. I like that Santa Claus all right. I believes in him pretty good after this, I bet."
She went at once to tell Mrs. Flannery, and Mrs. Flannery was far more excited about it than Mrs. Gratz had been. She said it was the hand of retribution paying back the chicken thief, and the hand of justice repaying Mrs. Gratz for sending toys to the little Flannerys, and pure luck giving Mrs. Gratz what she always got, and a number of other things.
"'Tis the luck of ye, Mrs. Gratz, ma'am," she said, "and often I do be saying it is the Dutch for luck, meaning no disrespect to ye, and the fatter the luckier, as I often told me old man, rest his soul, and him so thin. And Christmas morning at that, ma'am, which is nothing at all but the judgment of heaven on the dirty chicken thief, picking such a day for thieving, when there's plenty of other days in the year for him. Keep the money, ma'am, for 'tis yours by good rights, and I knew there'd be some good come to ye the minute ye handed me the presents for the kids. Oh, the good folks sure gets all their rewards in the world, only some don't, and I'm only sorry mine's a pig instead of chickens. But not wishing you hadn't the money yourself at all, but who would come to steal a pig? And them such loud squealers. And would you suspicion it was Mrs. Gratz, ma'am?"
"I think maybe I got me a present from Santa Claus."
"Yes,"
said Mrs. Gratz.
"And hear the woman," said Mrs. Flannery. "Do you hear that now? Well, true for you, ma'am, and stick to it. For there's no telling who'll be claiming the money, and even if Santa Claus brought a thing to a mortal soul, 'twas him brought you that. And 'twas only yesterday ye was saying ye had no belief in him."
"Yesterday I don't have beliefs in him," said Mrs. Gratz. "Today I have plenty of beliefs in him. I like him plenty. I don't care if he comes every year."
"Oh, sure not," said Mrs. Flannery. "And you with the $900 in your pocket. I'd be glad of the chance. I'd believe in him meself for 450.
That afternoon, Mrs. Flannery, whose excitement had not abated in the least, went over to Mrs. Gratz's to spend the afternoon talking about the money. She felt that it was good to be that near it, at any rate, and when one can make a whole afternoon's conversation out of what Mrs. Casey said to Mrs. O'Reilly about Mrs. McNally, it is a shame to miss a chance to talk about $900. Mrs. Flannery was rocking violently and talking rapidly, and Mrs. Gratz was slowly moving her rocker and answering in monosyllables when someone knocked at the door. Mrs. Gratz answered the knock. Her visitor was a tall, thin man, and he had a slouch hat, which he held in his hands as he talked. He seemed nervous, and his face wore a worried look, extremely worried. He looked like a man who had lost $900, but he did not look like Santa Claus. He was thinner and not so jolly-looking. At first, Mrs. Gratz had no idea that Santa Claus was standing before her, for he did not have a sleigh bell about him, and he had left his red cotton coat with the white batting trimming at home. He stood in the door playing with his hat, unable to speak. He seemed to have some delicacy about beginning.
"Well, what is it?"
said Mrs. Gratz. Her visitor pulled himself together with an effort.
"Well, ma'am, I'll tell you," he said frankly. "I'm a chicken buyer,
I buy chickens. That's my business. Dealing in poultry. So I came out today to buy some chickens.
On Christmas Day? Asked Mrs. Gratz.
Well, said the man, moving uneasily from one foot to the other. I did come on Christmas Day, didn't I? I don't deny that, ma'am. I did come on Christmas Day. I'd like to go out and have a look at your chickens.
It ain't so unusual for buyers to come buying chickens on Christmas Day, is it?
Interposed Mrs. Gratz good-naturedly.
Well, no, it ain't, then that's a fact, said the man uneasily. But I always do. The people I buy chickens for is just as apt to want to eat chicken one day as another day, and more so, turkey on Christmas Day, and chicken the next, for a change. That's what they always tell me. So I have to buy chickens every day. I hate to, but I have to, and if I could just go out and look around your chicken yard.
It was right there that Mrs. Gratz had a suspicion that Santa Claus stood before her.
But I don't sell such a chicken yard yet, she said.
The man wiped his forehead.
Oh, sure not, he said nervously. I was going to say, look around your chicken yard and see the chickens. I can't buy chickens without I see 'em, can I? Some folks might, but I can't with the kind of customers I've got. I've got mighty particular customers, and I pay extra prices so as to get the best for them. And when I go out and look around the chicken yard...
How much you pay for such nice big fat chickens, maybe?
Asked Mrs. Gratz.
Well, I'll tell you, said the man. 7 cents a pound is regular, ain't it? Well, I pay 12. I'll give you 12 cents and pay you right now and take all the chickens you got. That's my rule. But if you want to let me go out and see the chickens first and pick out the kind my regular customers like, I pay 20 cents a pound, but I won't pay 20 cents without I can see the chickens first.
Sure, said Mrs. Gratz. I wouldn't do it, too. Maybe I'll go out and bring a couple chickens for you to look at, yes?
No, don't, said the man impulsively. Don't do it. It wouldn't be no good. I've got to see the chickens on the hoof, as I might say.
On your hoofs? Said Mrs. Gratz. Such poultry don't have no hoofs.
Running around, explained the visitor. Running around the coop. I can tell if a chicken has got any disease that my trade wouldn't like if I see it running around the coop. There's a lot in the way a chicken runs, in the way it heists up its leg, for instance. That's what the trade calls on the hoof. So I'll just go out and have a look around the coop.
For 20 cents a pound, anybody could let buyers see their chickens on the hoof, I guess, said Mrs. Gratz.
Now, that's the way to talk, exclaimed the man.
Only but I ain't got any chickens, said Mrs. Gratz. So it ain't of use to look how they walk. So, goodbye.
Now say, said the man,
but Mrs. Gratz closed the door in his face. I guess such a Santa Claus came back yet, said Mrs. Gratz when she went into the room where Mrs. Flannery was sitting.
But it ain't any use. He don't leave many more such presents.
The impudence of him! Exclaimed Mrs. Flannery.
For $900 I could be impudent too, said Mrs. Gratz calmly. But I don't like such nowadays Santa Clauses coming back all the time. Once when I believe in Santa Clauses, they don't come back so much.
The thin Santa Claus had not gone far. He had crossed the street and stood gazing at Mrs. Gratz's door, and now he crossed again and knocked. Mrs. Gratz arose and went to the door.
"I believe he's come back,"
said Mrs. Flannery, and opened the door. He had indeed come back.
"Now see here," he said briskly, "ain't your name Mrs. Gratz? Well, I knowed it was, and I knowed you was a widow lady, and that's why I said I was a chicken buyer. I don't want to frighten you, but I ain't no chicken buyer."
"No?"
asked Mrs. Gratz.
"No, I ain't. I just said that so I could get a look at your chicken yard. I've got to see it. What I am is chicken house inspector for the 9th Ward, and the mayor sent me up here to inspect your chicken house. And I've got to do it before I go away, or I'll lose my job. I'll go right out now, and it'll be all over in a minute."
"I guess it ain't some use," said Mrs. Gratz. "I guess I don't keep any more chickens. They go too easy. Yesterday I've plenty, and today I haven't any."
"That's it," said the thin Santa Claus. "That's just it. That's the way tuberculosis bugs act, quick like that. They're a bad epidemic. tuberculosis bugs is. You see how they act? Yesterday you have chickens, and last night the tuberculosis bugs gets at them. And this morning, they've eat them all up.
Goodness, exclaimed Mrs. Gratz without emotion. With the feathers and the bones, too?
Sure, said the thin Santa Claus. Why, them tuberculosis bugs is perfectly ravenous. Once they get started, they eat feathers and bones and feet and all, and chicken has no chance at all. That's why the mayor sent me up here. He heard all your chickens was gone, and gone quick. And he says to me, tuberculosis bugs. That's what he says. And he says, you ain't doing your duty. You ain't inspecting Mrs. Gratz's chicken coop. You go and do it, or you fired, see? He says that. And he says, you inspect Mrs. Gratz's coop, and you kill off them bugs before they get into her house and eat her all up. Bones and all.
And feathers? Asked Mrs. Gratz calmly.
No. Well, you didn't say feathers. This ain't nothing to fool about. It's serious. So I'll go right out and have a look.
I guess such bugs ain't been in my coop last night, said Mrs. Gratz carelessly. I ain't afraid of such bugs in the winter time.
Well, that's where you make your mistake, said the thin Santa Claus. Winter is just the bad time for those bugs. The more a tuberculosis bug freezes up, the more dangerous it is. In the summer, they ain't so bad. They're soft-like and squash up when a chicken gets them. But in winter, they freeze up hard and get brittle. Then a chicken comes along and grabs one, and it busts into 1,000 pieces, and each piece turns into a new tuberculosis bug and busts into 1,000 pieces and so on. And the chicken gets all filled full of tuberculosis bugs before it knows it. When a chicken snaps up one tuberculosis bug, it has 1,000,000 in it inside of half an hour. And that chicken don't last long. When the bugs make for the house. What's that on your dress there?
Mrs. Gratz looked at her arm indifferently.
Nothing, she said. I thought maybe it was a tuberculosis bug had got on you already, said the thin Santa Claus. If it was, you'd be all eaten up inside of half an hour. Them bugs is awful rapacious.
Yes, inquired Mrs. Gratz with interest.
Such strong bugs, too, is it not? Well, you bet they are strong, began the stranger.
I think so, interrupted Mrs. Gratz,
to smash up a padlocks on such chicken houses. You make me afraid of such bugs. I don't dare let you go out there to get your bones and feet all eat up by them.
I guess not.
Well, you see, said the thin Santa Claus, puzzled, and then he cheered up. You see, I'm afraid of them. I've been fumigated against them. Fumigated and antiskepticized. I've been vaccinated against them by the Board of Health. I'll show you the mark on my arm if you want to see it.
No, don't, said Mrs. Gratz.
I let you go and look at the chicken coop if you want to, but it ain't no use. There ain't nothing there.
The thin Santa Claus paused and looked at Mrs. Gratz with suspicion.
Why? Did you find it?
He asked.
Find what?
Asked Mrs. Gratz innocently, and the thin Santa Claus sighed and walked around to the back of the house. Mrs. Gratz went with him. As Mrs. Gratz watched the thin man search the chicken yard for tuberculosis bugs, all doubt that he was her Santa Claus left her mind. He made a most minute investigation, but he did it more as a man might search for a lost purse than as a health officer would search for germs. He even got down on his hands and knees and poked under the chicken house with a stick, and when he had combed the chicken yard thoroughly and had looked all through the chicken house, he even searched the denuded vegetable garden in the backyard and looked over the fence into Mrs. Flannery's yard. Evidently, he was not pleased with his investigation, for he did not even say goodbye to Mrs. Gratz, but went away looking mad and cross. When Mrs. Gratz went into her house, she took her seat in her rocking chair and began rocking herself calmly and slowly.
"'Twas him done it, sure," said Mrs. Flannery.
"I don't like such come-against much," said Mrs. Gratz placidly. "I try me to believe in Santa Claus, but I like not such come-agains. In Germany did not Santa Claus come back so much. I don't like a Santa Claus should be so anxious. Still, I believes in him. But if he has too many such come-agains,
I don't believe in him much.
I would be sitting the police on him, Santa Claus or no Santa Claus, said Mrs. Flannery vindictively. The mean chicken thief.
Oh, said Mrs. Gratz easily. I guess I don't care much for the $900 Santa Claus deal some chickens. I ain't mad.
But she was a little provoked when another knock came at the door a few minutes later, and when, on opening it, she saw the thin Santa Claus before her again.
So, she said, Santa Claus is back yet once?
What's that?
Asked the man suspiciously.
I say, what is it you want? Said Mrs. Gratz.
Oh, said the man. Well, I ain't a-goin' to fool with you no longer, Mrs. Gratz. I'm going to tell you right out what I am and who I am. I'm a detective of the police, and I'm looking up a mighty bad character.
I guess I know right where you find one, said Mrs. Gratz politely.
Well, now don't be funny, said the thin Santa Claus peevishly. Maybe you notice I didn't say nothing when you spoke about that padlock being busted. Maybe you notice how careful I looked over your chicken coop and how I looked over the fence into the next yard. Well, I won't fool you. I ain't no chicken yard inspector, and I ain't no chicken buyer. Them was just my detective disguises. I'm out detecting a chicken thief, just a plain, ordinary chicken thief. And what I come for is clues.
Yes, said Mrs. Gratz. And what is it, such clues? I haven't any clueses.
The thin Santa Claus seemed provoked.
Now look here, he said. You may think this is funny, but it isn't. I have got to catch that chicken thief or I'll lose my job, and I can't catch him unless I have some clues to catch him with. Now, didn't you have some chicken stolen last night?
Chickens? Asked Mrs. Gratz. No, I didn't have chickens stolen.
Such tuberculosis bugs eat them, with feathers too and bones, right off the hoofs. Ain't it a pity?
It may have been a blush of shame, but it was more like a flush of anger that overspread the face of the thin Santa Claus. He stared hard at the placid German face of Mrs. Gratz, and decided she was too stupid to mean it, that she was not teasing him.
You don't catch on, he said. You see, there ain't any such things as tuberculosis bugs. I just made that up as a sort of detective disguise. Them chickens wasn't eaten by no bugs at all. They was stole, see? A chicken thief come right into the coop and stole them. Do you think any kind of a bug would pry off a padlock?
Mrs. Gratz seemed to let that sink into her mind and revolve there and get to feeling at home before she answered.
No, she said at length. I guess not. But Santa Claus could do it. Such a big fat man. Sure, he could do it.
Why, you,
began the thin man crossly, and then he changed his tone.
There ain't no such thing as Santa Claus,
he said, as one might speak to a child. But even a chicken thief would not tell a child such a thing, I hope.
No, queried Mrs. Gratz sadly. No Santa Claus? And I was scared of it myself, with such tuberculosis bugs around. He should not have gone into such a chicken coop, with so many bugs busting up all over. He had a right to have fumigated himself once, and now he ain't. He's all eat up on the hoof, bones and feet and all. And such a kind man, too.
The thin Santa Claus frowned. He had half an idea that Mrs. Gratz was fooling with him, and when he spoke, it was crisply.
Now, see here, he said. Last night, somebody broke into your chicken coop and stole your chickens. I know that. And he's been stealing chickens all around this town, and all around this part of the country, too. And I know that. And this stealing has got to stop. I've got to catch that thief. And to catch him, I've got to have a clue. A clue is something he left around or dropped where he was stealing. Now, did that chicken thief drop any clues in your chicken yard? That's what I want to know. Did he drop any clues?
Maybe, if he dropped some clues. Those tuberculosis bugs eat them up, suggested Mrs. Gratz. They eat bones and feathers. Maybe they eat clues, too.
Now, that ain't smart,
sneered the thin Santa Claus.
Don't you think you're funny, but I'll tell you the clue I'm looking for. Did that thief drop a pocketbook or anything like that?
Oh, a pocketbook, said Mrs. Gratz. How much would be in such a pocketbook, maybe?
$900, said the thin Santa Claus promptly.
Goodness, exclaimed Mrs. Gratz. So much money all in one clues. Come out to the chicken yard once. I'll help you hunt for clues, too.
The thin Santa Claus stood a minute, looking doubtfully at Mrs. Gratz. Her face was large and placid and unemotional.
Well, he said with a sigh, it ain't much use, but I'll try it again.
When he had gone, after another close search of the chicken yard and coop, Mrs. Gratz returned to her friend, Mrs. Flannery.
Pretty soon I don't believe any more in Santa Claus at all, she said. Pretty soon I have more beliefs in chicken teeth than in Santa Claus.
Yet a while I believes in him. But
one more of those come agains, and I don't.
He'll not be coming back any more, said Mrs. Flannery positively.
I'm wondering he came at all, and the jail's so handy. All you have to do is to call a cop.
Sure, said Mrs. Gratz.
But it is not nice I should put Santa Claus in jail. Such a liberal Santa Claus, too.
Have it your own way, ma'am, said Mrs. Flannery. I'll own 'tis some different when chickens is stole. 'Tis hard to expend the affections on a bunch of chickens, but if anyone was to steal my pig, to jail he would go, Santa Claus or no Santa Claus. Not but what you have a kind heart anyway, ma'am. Not wanting to put the poor fella in jail when he's already lost $900, which, goodness knows, you might have to hand back was the law to take a hand in it.
So, said Mrs. Gratz. Such is the law yet.
All right. I don't believe in chicken thieves, no matter how much he comes again. I stick me to Santa Claus. Always will I believe in Santa Claus. Chicken thieves give and wants to take away again, but Santa Claus is always giving and never taking.
You're forgetting the chickens that was took, suggested Mrs. Flannery.
Took, said Mrs. Gratz.
Took in, corrected Mrs. Flannery.
Tooked, said Mrs. Gratz.
I believes me not in Santa Claus that way. I believes he is a good old man. For givings, I believes in Santa Claus, but for takings, I believe in tuberculosis bugs.
And the busted padlock, then? Asked Mrs. Flannery.
Ach, exclaimed Mrs. Gratz.
Them reindeers is so frisky yet. They have a right to kick up and bust it, maybe.
Mrs. Flannery sighed.
'Tis a grand thing to have faith, ma'am, she said.
Yes, said Mrs. Gratz indolently. That's nice. And it is nice to have $900 more in the bank, ain't it?
And that's our story for this evening. I hope you enjoyed The Thin Santa Claus by Ellis Parker Butler. But now, I'd like to read you my all-time favorite Christmas story as a gift from me to you. Merry Christmas. And now, A Child's Christmas in Wales by Dylan Thomas. One Christmas was so much like another in those years around the sea town corner now and out of all sound except the distant speaking of voices I sometimes hear a moment before sleep that I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and 6 nights when I was 12 or whether it snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was 6. All the Christmases rolled down toward the two-tongued sea like a cold and headlong moon bundling down the sky that was our street. And they stop at the rim of the ice-edged, fish-freezing waves, and I plunge my hands in the snow and bring out whatever I can find. In goes my hand into the wool-white, bell-tongued ball of holidays, resting at the rim of the carol-singing sea, and out comes Mrs. Prothero and the firemen. It was on the afternoon of Christmas Eve, and I was in Mrs. Prothero's garden, waiting for cats with her son Jim. It was snowing. It was always snowing at Christmas. December, in my memory, is white as Lapland, though there were no reindeers, but there were cats. Patient, cold, and callous, our hands wrapped in socks, we waited to snowball the cats.
sleek and long as jaguars and horrible whiskered, spitting, snarling. They would slink and sidle over the white back garden walls, and the lynx-eyed hunters, Jim and I, fur-capped and moccasined trappers from Hudson Bay, off Mumbles Road, would hurl our deadly snowballs at the green of their eyes. The wise cats never appeared. We were so still, Eskimo-footed Arctic marksmen in the muffling silence of the eternal snows, eternal ever since Wednesday, that we never heard Mrs. Prothero's first cry from her igloo at the bottom of the garden, or if we heard it at all, it was to us like the far-off challenge of our enemy and prey, the neighbor's polar cat. But soon the voice grew louder. "Fire!" cried Mrs. Prothero as she banged the dinner gong, and we ran down the garden with the snowballs in our arms toward the house, and smoke indeed was pouring out of the dining room, and the gong was bombulating, and Mrs. Prothero was announcing ruin like a town crier in Pompeii. This was better than all the cats and whales standing on the wall in a row. We bounded into the house laden with snowballs and stopped at the door of the smoke-filled room. Something was burning, all right. Perhaps it was Mr. Prothero, who always slept there after midday dinner with a newspaper over his face. But he was standing in the middle of the room, saying, "A fine Christmas!" and smacking at the smoke with a slipper.
"Call the fire brigade!" cried Mrs.
Prothero as she beat the gong.
"They won't be there," said Mr. Prothero. "It's Christmas!"
There was no fire to be seen, only clouds of smoke, and Mr. Prothero standing in the middle of them, waving his slipper as though he were conducting.
"Do something," he said.
And we threw all our snowballs into the smoke. I think we missed Mr. Prothero, and ran out of the house to the telephone box. "Let's call the police as well," Jim said, "and the ambulance. And Ernie Jenkins, he likes fires." But we only called the fire brigade. And soon the fire engine came, and three tall men in helmets brought a hose into the house, and Mr. Prothero got out just in time before they turned it on. Nobody could have had a noisier Christmas Eve. And when the firemen turned off the hose and were standing in the wet, smoky room, Jim's aunt, Miss Prothero, came downstairs and peered in at them. Jim and I waited, very quietly, to hear what she would say to them. She said the right thing always. She looked at the three tall firemen in their shining helmets, standing among the smoke and cinders and dissolving snowballs, and she said,
"Would you like anything to read?"
Years and years ago when I was a boy, when there were wolves in Wales and birds the color of red flannel petticoats whisked past the harp-shaped hills, when we sang and wallowed all night in caves that smelt like Sunday afternoons in damp front farmhouse parlors, and we chased with the jawbones of deacons the English and the bears before the motor car, before the wheel, before the Duchess-faced horse, when we rode the daft and happy hills bareback, it snowed and it snowed. But here a small boy says, "It snowed last year, too. I made a snowman, and my brother knocked it down. And I knocked my brother down. And then we had tea." But that was not the same snow, I say. Our snow was not only shaken from the whitewash buckets down the sky, it came shawling out of the ground and swam and drifted out of the arms and hands and bodies of the trees. Snow grew overnight on the roofs of the houses like a pure and grandfather moss. Minutely ivied the walls and settled on the postman opening the gate, like a dumb, numb thunderstorm of white, torn Christmas cards. Were there postmen then, too? With sprinkling eyes and wind-cherried noses, on spread, frozen feet they crunched up to the doors and mittened on them manfully, but all the children could hear was a ringing of bells.
"You mean that the postman went rat-a-tat-tat and the doors rang?"
I mean that the bells the children could hear were inside them.
"I only hear thunderstorms sometimes, never bells."
There were church bells, too.
Inside them?
No, no, no. In the bat, black, snow-white belfries tugged by bishops and storks. And they rang their tidings over the bandaged town, over the frozen foam of the powder and ice cream hills, over the crackling sea. It seemed that all the churches boomed for joy under my window, and the weathercocks crew for Christmas on our fence.
Get back to the postman.
They were just ordinary postmen, fond of walking and dogs and Christmas in the snow. They knocked on the doors with blue knuckles.
Ours has got a black knocker.
And then they stood on the white welcome mat in the little drifted porches and huffed and puffed, making ghosts with their breath, and jogged from foot to foot like small boys wanting to go out.
And then the presents?
And then the presents, after the Christmas box. And the cold postman, with a rose on his button nose, tingled down the tea-tray slithered run of the chilly, glinting hill. He went in his ice-bound boots like a man on fishmonger's slabs. He wagged his bag like a frozen camel's hump, dizzily turning the corner on one foot, and by God, he was gone.
Get back to the presents!
There were useful presents, engulfing mufflers of the old coach days, and mittens made for giant sloths, zebra scarves of a substance like silky gum that could be tug-of-war'd down to the galoshes, blinding tam-o'-shanters like patchwork tea cozies and bunny-suited busbies and balaclavas for victims of head-shrinking tribes. From aunts, who always wore wool next to their skin, there were mustached and rasping vests that made you wonder why the ants had any skin left at all. And once I had a little crocheted nose bag from an aunt, now, alas, no longer whinnying with us. And pictureless books in which small boys, though warned with quotations not to, would skate on Farmer Giles' pond and did and drowned. And books that told me everything about the wasp, except why.
Go on, the useless presents.
Bags of moist and many-colored jelly bellies, and a folded flag and a false nose and a tram conductor's cap, and a machine that punched tickets and rang a bell. Never a catapult. Once, by mistake that no one could explain, a little hatchet. And a celluloid duck that made, when you pressed it, a most unduck-like sound. A mewing moo that an ambitious cat might make who wished to be a cow. And a painting book in which I could make the grass, the trees, the sea, and the animals any color I pleased. And still the dazzling sky-blue sheep are grazing in the red field under the rainbow-billed and pea-green birds. Hard-boiled toffee, fudge in all sorts, crunches and cracknels, humbugs, glaciers, marzipan, and butter Welsh for the Welsh. And troops of bright tin soldiers who, if they could not fight, could always run. And snakes and families and happy ladders and easy hobby games for little engineers, complete with instructions. Oh, easy for Leonardo. And a whistle to make the dog bark to wake up the old man next door to make him beat on the wall with his stick to shake our picture off the wall. And a packet of cigarettes. You put one in your mouth, and you stood at the corner of the street, and you waited for hours in vain for an old lady to scold you for smoking a cigarette, and then with a smirk, you ate it. And then it was breakfast under the balloons.
Were there uncles, like in our house?
There are always uncles at Christmas. The same uncles. And on Christmas morning, with dog-disturbing whistle and sugar fags, I would scour the swatched town for the news of the little world, and find always a dead bird by the post office or by the white deserted swings. Perhaps a robin, all but one of his fires out. Men and women wading or scooping back from chapel with taproom noses and wind-bust cheeks, all albinos, huddles their stiff black jarring feathers against the irreligious snow. Mistletoe hung from the gas brackets in all the front parlors. There was sherry and walnuts and bottled beer and crackers by the dessert spoons. And cats in their furabouts watched the fires, and the high-heaped fires spat, all ready for the chestnuts and the mulling pokers. Some few large men sat in the front parlors without their collars, uncles, most certainly, trying their new cigars, holding them out judiciously at arm's length, returning them to their mouths, coughing, then holding them out again as though waiting for the explosion. Some few small aunts, not wanted in the kitchen or anywhere else for that matter, sat on the very edge of their chairs, poised and brittle, afraid to break, like faded cups and saucers. Not many those mornings trod the piling streets. An old man always, fawn-bowlered, yellow-gloved, and at this time of year with spats of snow, would take his constitutional to the white bowling green and back, as if he would take it wet or fire on Christmas Day or Doomsday. Sometimes two hale young men with big pipes blazing, no overcoats, and wind-blown scarves would trudge unspeaking down to the forlorn sea to work up an appetite, to blow away the fumes, who knows, to walk into the waves until nothing of them was left but the two furling smoke clouds of their inextinguishable briars. Then I would be slap-dashing home, the gravy smell of the dinners of others, the bird smell, the brandy, the pudding and mints coiling up to my nostrils, when out of a snow-clogged side lane there would come a boy, the spit of myself, with a pink-tipped cigarette and the velvet past of a black eye, cocky as a bullfinch, leering all to himself. I hated him on sight and sound, and would be about to put my dog whistle to my lips and blow him off the face of Christmas, when suddenly he, with a violet wink, put his whistle to his lips and blew so stridently, so high, so exquisitely loud, that gobbling faces, their cheeks bulged with goose, would press against their tinseled windows, the whole length of the white echoing street. For dinner we had turkey and blazing pudding, and after dinner the uncles sat in front of the fire, loosened all buttons, put their large moist hands over their watch chains, groaned a little, and slept. Mothers, aunts, and sisters scuttled to and fro bearing tureens. Auntie Bessie, who had already been frightened twice by a clockwork mouse, whimpered at the sideboard and had some elderberry wine. The dog was sick. Auntie Dosie had to have three aspirins, but Auntie Hannah, who liked port, stood in the middle of the snow-bound backyard singing like a big-bosomed thrush. I would blow up balloons to see how big they would blow up to, and when they burst, which they all did, the uncles jumped and rumbled. In the rich and heavy afternoon, the uncles breathing like dolphins, and the snow descending, I would sit among festoons and Chinese lanterns and nibble dates and try to make a model man of war, following the instructions for little engineers, and produce what might be mistaken for a sea-going tram car. Or I would go out, my bright new boots squeaking into the white world, on to the seaward hill to call on Jim and Dan and Jack, and to pad through the still streets, leaving huge footprints on the hidden pavements. I bet people will think there's been hippos. What would you do if you saw a hippo coming down our street? I'd go like this, bang! I'd throw him over the railings and roll him down the hill, and then I'd tickle him under the ear and he'd wag his tail. What would you do if you saw two hippos? Iron-flanked and bellowing he-hippos clanked and battered through the scudding snow toward us as we passed Mr. Daniel's house. Let's post Mr. Daniel a snowball through his letterbox. Let's write things in the snow. Let's write, Mr. Daniel looks like a spaniel all over his lawn. Or we walked on the white shore. Can the fish see it snowing? The silent, one-clouded heavens drifted on to the sea. Now we were snow-blind travelers lost on the North Hills, and vast, dew-lapped dogs with flasks round their necks ambled and shambled up to us, baying, Excelsior! We returned home through the poor streets, where only a few children fumbled with bare red fingers in the wheel-rutted snow and catcalled after us, their voices fading away as we trudged uphill into the cries of the dockbirds and the hooting of ships out in the whirling bay. And then, at tea, the recovered uncles would be jolly, and the ice cake loomed in the center of the table like a marble grave. Auntie Hannah laced her tea with rum, because it was only once a year. Bring out the tall tales now that we told by the fire as the gaslight bubbled like a diver. Ghosts hooed like owls in the long night when I dared not look over my shoulder. Animals lurked in the cubbyhole under the stairs and the gas meter ticked. And I remember that we went singing carols once when there wasn't the shaving of a moon to light the flying streets. At the end of a long road was a drive that led to a large house, and we stumbled up the darkness of the drive that night, each one of us afraid, each one holding a stone in his hand in case, and all of us too brave to say a word. The wind through the trees made noises as of old and unpleasant, and maybe web-footed men wheezing in caves. We reached the black bulk of the house. What shall we give them? Hark the herald!
No, Jack said. Good King Wenceslas. I'll count three. 1, 2, 3, and we began to sing. Our voices high and seemingly distant in the snow-felted darkness round the house that was occupied by nobody we knew. We stood close together near the dark door. Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen. And then a small, dry voice, like the voice of someone who has not spoken for a long time, joined our singing. A small, dry eggshell voice from the other side of the door. A small, dry voice through the keyhole. And when we stopped running, we were outside of our house. The front room was lovely. Balloons floated under the hot water bottle gulping gas. Everything was good again and shone over the town. Perhaps it was a ghost, Jim said. Perhaps it was a troll, Dan said, who was always reading. Let's go and see if there's any jelly left, Jack said. And we did that. Always on Christmas night there was music. An uncle played the fiddle, a cousin sang Cherry Ripe, and another uncle sang Drake's Drum. It was very warm in the little house. Auntie Hannah, who had got on to the parsnip wine, sang a song about bleeding hearts and death, and then another in which she said her heart was like a bird's nest. And then everybody laughed again. And then I went to bed. Looking through my bedroom window out into the moonlight and the unending smoke-colored snow, I could see the lights in the windows of all the other houses on our hill and hear the music rising from them up the long, steady, falling night. I turned the gas down. I got into bed. I said some words to the close and holy darkness, and then I slept. Thank you for listening. Merry Christmas to you and yours. I'm Jennifer March, and this is not your mother's story time.